Welcome to the Ageless by Rescue podcast. I'm Baha Etmanen, your host, and today I'm throwing it back to one of our top-rated episodes. Since the Ageless channel launched 2.5 years ago, I've had the honor of hosting global experts, celebrities, and trailblazers in the field of beauty, aesthetics, wellness, and longevity. If you're enjoying the episodes, please check out the Be Ageless Network, which now features other formidable experts in their specialist areas of aesthetics, wellness, and longevity. I do hope you enjoy today's top-rated episode, and if you do, please don't forget to rate and review on iTunes. I'm absolutely delighted to bring you one of the leading health people that I follow, Dr. Harry Weisinger. Welcome to Ageless by Rescue. Thank you so much for agreeing to be on the show. I've been stalking you for ages. I take the Truth Origin supplements that you produce. I've recommended it to my favorite clinic in Australia, Leopardy Saint and All Saints Clinic. So to have an opportunity to meet with you and to share your vast knowledge on the subject. Well,
I appreciate your kind words, and it's absolutely my pleasure to be here with you. Thank you.
Now, if you're not already a subscriber to Truth Origins newsletters and Dr. Harry, you're missing out. I absolutely love getting your newsletters, and the information that you provide is so broad, but also really relevant. Before we hit record, we were talking about the effects of lockdown on Australian health. And I'd like to touch on that in our conversation today. But let's start with your background. You know, obviously, you're a medical doctor. You're the founder of a plant supplement business. You played an integral role in the launch of a brand juggernaut, Specsavers, in Australia, with your research and work on eye health. And today, I would like to talk to you about the subject of aging well. And in particular, the things that we can do to take control of our ageless journey and some of the key markers that we're in control of dialing up and dialing down. So let's start with your own health journey, because it's actually quite shocking the role that the genetic hand that you were dealt didn't seem to be fair.
No, I think you could say that is true. So I was in good health until the age of 18. So I had a relatively uneventful childhood. And then in year 12, I started getting abdominal pain. And cutting a long story short, I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease, which is an inflammatory bowel disease, at the age of 18. And that really disrupted my university life. So I was sort of in and out of hospital with bowel obstructions and having to take some fairly strong medication, had a couple of surgeries along the way. And then I was okay for a while. And then I had a sort of a combination of maladies seemingly all at once. So I had, as a 30-something year old, I'd had a hip replacement. I'd had treatment for lymphoma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Wow.
And at the age of 39, I had a coronary stent. So a stent put in my right coronary artery. So I sort of copped it all at once. And so there I was at the age of 40. And I had on my list autoimmune disease, chronic arthritis. I'd had cancer, and cardiovascular disease. So I thought I'd better do something about my own health. Now, of course, I'd studied health for all of my student days, right from optometry through to my master's and PhD and then medical school. So I knew a lot about health, but I guess I hadn't really put much of it into practice. And to be fair as well, the medical system, as you're probably aware, isn't really set up for prevention and wellness. It works much better when things have gone bad, when it's a bit too late. So when disease presents, then it steps in. It's fantastic. So once you've got severe osteoarthritis, you can have a hip replacement, and that's fantastic. But prior to that, in terms of prevention and wellness and longevity, medicine is probably not the place to start.
I believe you, and I think that, you know, seeing the changes in the Australian medical system has really seen that the destruction of the amount of time the medical profession is able to spend with a patient. Mm. And so the prevention conversation is really a function of diagnostics. And diagnostics, a proper diagnostics, is a function of time and getting to know not just the problem that they've presented with, but the lifestyle that goes before the problem. And so let's talk about something that you touched on and which keeps coming up in my research about wellness and longevity and agelessness, which is a passion topic for you: inflammation. What is inflammation and how does it affect the aging process?
Mm. Well, inflammation is a complex process or series of processes that occur in the body. And the goal of inflammation is basically to deal with insults. I'll call them insults because that's what the medical world refers to, injury and illness and that sort of thing, infection. Deal with insults and then begin the process of cleaning things up and then beginning to heal and repair. So we all know and we're all familiar with inflammation and its characteristic signs. So if you think about if you were hit by a golf ball on your thigh, you would pretty quickly notice an area of redness. It would be swollen. It would be hot. It would be painful. And it would, depending on where it was, it would affect the function. So they're the five characteristics of inflammation. And I guess there's the other way to think about it is how do we get inflammation? It's basically there are chemical messengers in the body which trigger the movement of cells and fluid and also co-opting the blood vessels to release certain things to create those five characteristics that I mentioned. So inflammation is essential. It's necessary. Without it, we die. So it's absolutely crucial in how we handle things like cuts and abrasions and infections and precancerous changes in our body and that sort of thing. So it's a bit of a misnomer or misunderstanding to think that inflammation is bad. It's not bad. It's absolutely fundamental to our survival. The problem occurs when inflammation is dysregulated or inappropriate. A classic example of that, the best example I can give you, is anaphylaxis.
Right.
Which is an inflammatory response to something that's foreign to the body. So the body goes, oh, my goodness, there's something foreign here. We need to deal with it. So we're going to send fluid and cells and we're going to open up the blood vessels so it happens really fast and it just so happens to affect the throat and the airways and possibly the mouth. And that can, of course, cause airway restriction and cardiorespiratory failure. That's the extreme example of inflammation that is a sledgehammer when finesse is needed. You know, when a sewing kit is needed.
What a great visual example. I absolutely get it. And it is, you're right. It's kind of like an overreach.
it's a total overreach. So it's like, yeah, anaphylaxis to a bee sting. Okay, so I've got a little bee sting, a tiny little bit of venom has entered my body. So what I'm going to do is kill myself with inflammation of my throat. It's this dysregulated inflammation that is the cause of so many of the illnesses that affect us today. Now, as you know, if I can take a step back and talk about what aging is from a medical point of view.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, I mean, so without wanting to go into too much depth, because I really don't, and I need to declare I'm not a geneticist. I'm an avid follower of health, wellness, agelessness. Yeah, the thing, we are interested in the same things. But it's important that I guess people understand that there are metabolic changes and genetic changes and epigenetic changes that occur over time. They're characteristic, and this is it's the fact that they're characteristic and occur over time that has led people now for millennia to believe that it is it's a fait accompli. It's going to happen to all of us because over time we collect these defects in our genetic material, in the epigenetic changes that occur, in the metabolic changes that occur. These happen over time, and there's nothing we can do about it, apparently, although you and I are going to talk about a different view to that. But what happens is typically these things happen over time. We get these collections of defects and cellular junk and all this stuff that leads to what we understand as the correlates of aging. Our skin changes, our hair changes color, our face loses volume, our blood vessels get atherosclerotic, our joints get more painful, our thinking less clearer, that sort of thing. These happen characteristically over time. So that's aging. And it just so happens that these are correlated with an increase. So these aging processes are correlated with an increase in inflammation and the diseases of inflammation and the markers of inflammation. Now, whether it's cause or effect is not always clear. Did the inflammation cause the aging or vice versa? Wow, but I don't think it actually matters. I think when you affect one, you affect the other. And so, you know, they're so closely interrelated. And you said before, you know, in terms of wellness and longevity and health span. So not just about living longer, but about living well. Absolutely. Longer. So much of that is about avoiding chronic disease. And I know we're all after utopian, you know, waking up feeling fantastic and being beautiful and thinking clearly and that sort of stuff. But to get to that, you've got to get through avoiding diabetes, avoiding heart disease, avoiding arthritis, avoiding Alzheimer's. You know, so
I always say that a great analogy is, you know, everything else is a distraction until you have a real distraction. So, you know, the people who get cancer or have some kind of massive health issue or a massive loss or crisis in their life, at that point, nothing else matters. So you're quite right. We have to avoid the big moments, those big things that can really destroy our lives so that we can enjoy not just lifespan, but also health span. I totally agree.
Exactly. Exactly. And we know that about a third of us at this point are going to die of cardiovascular related causes. A third of us will die from cancer related causes. And then the rest is made up of the constellation of things like metabolic disease.
What is metabolic disease?
So things like diabetes.
Okay.
Predominantly, but also liver disease. This is increasing in prevalence. So these are all related. You know, there seems to be a relationship with all of these things and inflammation, dysregulated inflammation. not necessarily the cause, but if I told you that cancer is caused 15 to 20%, maybe a quarter even of all cancers, are caused by chronic inflammation at a particular site in the body. Therefore, if we can do something to reduce the inflammation at that site, whether it's in breast tissue or the colon or somewhere else, then we are reducing our chances of getting cancer and thereby setting ourselves up for a better trajectory of wellness and longevity. So that's my view. That's my view of inflammation and wellness and longevity.
What can we do? What's in our hands on the epigenetic side of things? So we've got the genetic coding that can't be changed. And then you have lifestyle and you have epigenetics and you have, a number of things that are now available and understood since we've done the gene testing, since we've done all of that research. And certainly, in our conversation earlier, we were saying that, the pandemic has opened up the doors for people to be curious and invested in their own personal health journey.
Absolutely. Well, great question. What can we do? What can we do to reduce our aging and live better is I believe the question you've just asked me. I think it's interesting. So I'm a avid baseball fan, and sorry if I go a little bit off track here, but in baseball, what happens is early in the season, a particular baseball team, and I follow the Yankees. They'll look at how many wins and losses they've had. And what they'll do is they'll project out what it looks like the team is going to have won and lost by the end of the season. So they project out, looks like the Yankees are going to win 93 games this year. Okay? And, of course, things happen along the way and they change the trajectory and so forth. And I actually think about lifespan and wellness in exactly the same way. Your genetics and your environment basically combine to give you a trajectory of how long and how well you're going to live, in my view. So let's suppose the average life expectancy in Australia today is about 80 to 85, depending on whether you're a man or a woman. There are things that will negatively affect your trajectory that will actually make it that you might not make it to the average lifespan. And there are things you could do to increase your longevity and wellness, which is, of course, what we're talking about. If I'm honest, I think COVID and all of the associated lockdowns and restrictions and mental health issues have had a real impact on people's trajectory. And I think all of us, I'm absolutely convinced.
So you think that down the track we're going to see a marker, which was this 18 months, 2 years in, the history of humanity.
I do.
That is actually going to negatively impact our life.
I do. Wow. I do.
And not from the disease, but from what happened to us.
Exactly. I really, really, really do believe it. But I also believe that there are things we can do to tip it back in our favour to get back up towards 93 wins for the season. And so there are things that definitely give us a hit to our wellness and our longevity. We know, for instance, that loneliness is a massive factor. It's huge when it comes to life expectancy. And as I said, chronic inflammation, chronically high cortisol levels in the body can cause a reduction of lifespan. Sleeping less, insomnia and other associated conditions can lead to reduction of lifespan and wellness. So the place to start looking, I think, is in you can't do anything about your genetics, okay? We know that. Epigenetics is really, you've got genetic code, and just for your listeners, to clarify what this means, is your genetics are the genetic code. These are your genes, and these genes in turn encode proteins. And the simplest way to think about it is there are proteins that make it so your eyes are brown, and there are proteins that make it so your eyes are blue, and so on and so forth. So your genetics, you don't choose. You're given those. They're handed down. But then epigenetics is what is done with those genes, because epigenetics is all about turning on and off genes, because it's not just about having the genes. They actually have to be turned on to make the protein that encodes for the particular characteristic, or they can be turned off. These are fundamental concepts that affect our health and well-being, and we're learning more about these all the time. So, for instance, a cancer cell is very cunning, because what it does is through epigenetic means, turns off DNA damage repair genes, because we've got damage repair genes built into our genome. Cancer cells turn those off. That's an epigenetic phenomenon. That's bad for us, for instance. So that's epigenetics. As you say, lifestyle, which probably exerts its influence through epigenetics, is fundamental, and it is obviously the easiest thing for us to affect. We, not necessarily easy from a motivational point of view, but it's, we know, for instance, that sleeping between 7 and 8 hours gives you a much better outcome than sleeping less than 7 hours. We know the effects of that in terms of how we look, how we feel, how we think, but also on our susceptibility to cardiovascular disease and stroke, diabetes, and a whole manner of neurodegenerative diseases as well. So sleep. I mean, it sounds really simple, doesn't it? But most people, and I even need to tell my patients that the place to start, the reason most people are sleep deprived is they do the maths wrong. You can't go to bed at midnight, set your alarm at 6 and get 8 hours of sleep. It's not possible. So you need to first do the maths, make sure there's an 8 hour opportunity.
Yeah.
Because then you'll probably get, if I'm in bed for 8 hours, I'll get 7 hours sleep. So, you know, with tossing and turning and what have you, I know that I'll get above that critical 7 hour number. So that's the first thing. And something that we should all be able to improve if we're not sleeping well today. Simple things like mathematics first, cool, dark room, etc. Soundproofing if needed, and so forth. But then I think, and most of my, so I have a clinic that specializes in weight loss and longevity. And I think the biggest thing that most people can do to improve is change their diet. Your diet is fundamental.
Absolutely. I mean, it comes up in every single study about longevity, and you can't avoid it. You have to have the conversation, don't you?
Absolutely. So we know that a lot of the studies have demonstrated things like calorie restriction and its benefits for longevity. Also, I'm a big proponent of a ketogenic diet. I think it's, when it's deployed in bursts, it's very effective. So a 2 to 3 month block of ketogenic diet. Intermittent fasting is a brilliant tool that everyone can do.
I've been doing it for a year now, and it's a game changer. Like my sleep, my brain fog, my energy, my resilience to colds and flus, like night and day, the best thing I've ever done. Two things. I take metformin. I think it's been amazing for me. And intermittent fasting. And they're easy.
Absolutely. Do you, in
your weight loss, you know, diagnosis and recommendations, do you believe that your genetics play a part on what kind of diet you should be on? Do you do genetic testing and then make recommendations on whether it should be ketogenic, intermittent fasting, Mediterranean, you know, restrictive in some other way?
It's a good question. Again, I think the short answer is I don't do genetic testing because I don't know the relationship. I wouldn't know what to do with the results is the short answer. And I believe at a basic level that everyone can benefit from a certain amount of carbohydrate restriction, calorie restriction, and fasting. So I don't actually think genetic testing would contribute too much to what I do.
Yes.
And I don't think it contribute much to the success of my patients either. What I can tell you is certain people don't do as well on a ketogenic diet as they do on a intermittent fasting program, and vice versa. Some people do better in reverse. And again, in my practice, I see a lot of athletes as well. So they're looking for marginal improvements and marginal gains. So then it becomes a trade-off of performance versus weight loss, because there is a point where you're carbohydrate restricted so much that you can't perform as well as an endurance athlete or as a high-end power athlete. So I think diet is fundamental to longevity. We've discussed sleep. I think exercise is obviously the pillar, the next pillar. I'm a big believer that it doesn't take a lot of exercise to get the full benefit that exercise can provide in terms of wellness and longevity. I do remember back when I was doing psychiatric rotations, the professor in the department was a massive advocate of exercise instead of antidepressants, because the studies that had been done showed that the positive benefits for mood, which of course is a massive element of wellness, the positive benefits of exercise were as great as any antidepressant medication. Of course, it's a difficult thing to get motivated to exercise when your mood is low. But if people are able just to start exercising, as I said, I don't think it takes much. It probably takes 30 minutes a day of zone two exercise. The more the merrier, obviously, but it really doesn't take that much. And when I say zone two, it's not walking. It's got to be a bit more than walking. It's got to be.
You've got to throw in a few hills and.
You've got to throw in some hills, and you've got to be puffing a bit, but able to talk is probably the best guide. So for me, that's when, I'm 50 now, and so when my heart rate is 128 to 130, I'm in zone two, and I can still talk. If I'm on my bike, I can talk to the person next to me, and I know that's doing fantastic benefit in similar ways to what metformin is doing, because these are all acting through epigenetic changes. They are improving things like autophagy, which I'm sure your listeners are aware of. It's the mechanism by which the body recycles material when it goes into a stress situation. So the idea is to put the body into a bit of stress to activate autophagy, which basically turns over all the dead and dying cells and genetic material and mitochondria and all that stuff that are a bit frayed around the edges, and that renews us. So
what are your thoughts? I know that you have a supplement company. And yep. I'm going to get to talk about some of the things that you've created in that range, because it's a really tight edit, which I appreciate because it can be really confusing. But have you studied or are you interested in that field of nootropics and what you can do with the brain and supplementation for cognitive health, memory, brain fog, performance?
Great question. Yes, I am interested. I'm interested in all of this stuff.
Me too.
Like you, I wanna think more clearly. I wanna perform better. I wanna look better. I wanna live longer. I mean, that's the goal, right? And of course, how you think, and you know, that's so fundamental with so many of us now, more and more of us thinking for a living, but all of us need to think clearly. No matter, even if you're a gardener for a living or a painter and decorator, you still need to think more clearly. And when you do think clearly, you feel better. So I'm absolutely interested in nootropics. I confess I've tried a bunch myself.
Have you found some success in that space particularly? I'm really interested in the mushrooms and what they're doing in that space. It's really interesting to me, and I'm playing around in that area myself.
Indeed. So I need to basically put up a signpost here to say that there is a difference between what I do for myself and what I recommend for my patients.
Yes, sure.
What I recommend for my patients is evidence-based. There's research behind it. There's safety and tolerability data behind it. And there's net benefit when you weigh up all the studies that have been done. For myself, I have a much lower bar. Okay, so if there's the possibility that chaga mushrooms will improve how I think and feel, I'm going to try them because I think to myself, it's a mushroom extract. How bad could it be? All right. Other people are taking it. And I know that's what most people do. You go on a bit of social proof. There's a few good reviews and so on and so forth. So I definitely am interested in that space and I have experimented. I must confess, I haven't personally felt much of a change. And I gave it a good go. I gave it a good go with chaga mushrooms and other nootropics that I've tried, but I am actively monitoring the literature all the time to see if anything comes up. And to be fair, these studies are hard to do because the outcomes that they're trying to measure, it's very difficult. How can you quantify clear thinking?
Memory. You can measure short-term, long-term memory.
You can. And I think the other thing, of course, we need to take into account is the placebo effect, which is real and can account for as much as 30% of any.
And I don't mind the placebo effect.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Completely agree. So I'm with you there. I think, and this is going to sound strange from a person that's got a supplement company, but I'm a bit pessimistic and skeptical about most supplements. And let me explain myself, because I don't want to put my own company out of business. I'm very deliberate about how I think about and talk about supplements. I at a high level, I believe most supplements that people consume are unhelpful. Okay.
Why?
Well, again, from an evidence point of view, there's very little evidence to suggest that taking a supplement that puts you above the normal range of whatever it is actually has benefit. There are some exceptions. Okay. And I do want to qualify everything I talk about with respect to supplements, because it's really important to get this across. If there is deficiency, if you are vitamin C deficient, vitamin D deficient, magnesium, zinc deficient, okay, then absolutely there is a role for supplements, because we know that there are often quite deleterious effects of having deficiency. Vitamin D is a classic example.
I know. Classic. I was going to say that was the first supplement from Truth Origins that yes. I was introduced to. And,
yes.
And I loved it because it's liquid. It's a spray. So you don't have to take horse pills. One less horse exactly. pill to take. But, yeah, it makes a difference.
It does. And the reason it makes a difference is because deficiency is common. And deficiency, just so your listeners know what vitamin D does, it helps us absorb calcium from the diet. Calcium is essential for cells to work. Muscles, neurons, everything relies on calcium. So if you don't get enough calcium from your diet, the body doesn't go, oh, well, there's not enough calcium, I'll do without it. No, it takes it from your bones.
Yeah, it leaches it,
which
right?
is the best store. So vitamin D deficiency ultimately leads to osteoporosis, and from osteoporosis, bad things happen. So vitamin D is fundamental, but your listeners might also be interested to know that vitamin D supplementation actually is associated with a reduction of dermatitis. So atopic dermatitis, so eczema, psoriasis is reduced by vitamin D. And there's some evidence to suggest that it can reduce the incidence of non-melanoma skin cancer. So vitamin D is a bit of a curious one, and it's because of the evidence, it's in our lineup, right? It's in my list of vitamins that are important and work, supplements that work. There's a couple of others that I think are important and have a lot of literature behind them. Omega-3 fatty acids, you'll be aware of. So I did my master's and PhD in this field.
And is it true that omega-3 fatty acids can actually help reduce visceral fat around the belly?
I'm not sure there's that much evidence for that, although I have seen something like that.
Yeah, I read a PhD paper on it and I was like, okay, wow.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think the more established claims about omega-3 fatty acids are with respect to cardiovascular disease
yes.
reduction. So that's one. And we know that it is essential for neural development and neural function and eye development and eye function.
Dr. And Harry, so can we improve our eye health and eye age? Is this a possibility that we can actually improve our eyesight?
Well, I mean, outside of having your prescription, because there's a couple of sides to vision. There's the optics of your eye, and then there's the health of your eye.
Yes.
Now the optics. Yeah, and the optics of your eye can obviously be. If they're not quite right, they can be remedied in almost all cases with a pair of spectacles or contact lenses. So you can optimize your vision with good optics, spectacles or contact lenses. And then the other side of the coin is the health of your eyes. And the goal really should be just to maintain the health of your eyes. It's probably quite similar to maintain eye health as it is maintaining general health, in that the principles are similar. We're trying to avoid poisoning this part of our body. We're trying to avoid inflammation in that part of the body. So the same principles that serve you well for your general health will tend to serve you well for the health of your eyes.
And will blue light affect the health of your eyes?
It's a good question, and it's a really common one. So most of that light is actually absorbed by the media of the eye. So most visible light, okay, or most invisible light is absorbed So things like ultraviolet and infrared are absorbed by the tissues of the eye, the cornea, the lens, the liquid in the eye, and so forth. Visible blue light obviously gets through. Not all of it gets through, but some of it gets through. And we have receptors in the back of the eye that catch blue light specifically. That's their job. So there's a pigment in the cells at the back of the eye in the retina that absorb blue light. That's their job. Blue light, therefore, is not deleterious to our health, but there is some evidence that blue light can decrease the production of melatonin and thereby affect sleep regulation. So the evidence is not strong. There's certainly a lot more uptake of blue light blocking lenses than there is evidence for their use. I've got a pair of blue light blocking lenses that I use to read before bed, because like most people now, I'm reading from a screen as opposed to a book and or a computer. And I did so with the thinking that I'll just try and do whatever I can to improve my chances of sleeping well. But it's not.
So you're doing it to improve the chances of sleeping well, not
yes.
The concern isn't damage to your eye.
I don't have
the melatonin concern. Inhibition.
Totally.
So let's talk. I'll get off the eye thing, because I think we should have a conversation all about the eye separately.
Happy to do that.
But let's stay on the supplementation that you think is worth it and is warranted,
yes.
And that you've invested your own money into creating.
Yes. Yes. So there are two supplements I believe have got a weight of scientific evidence that is compelling. And as you say, I've invested a lot of my own time and money, and we have world-class people that have developed our products. The first of these is cannabidiol, or non-psychoactive cannabis oil. So derived from the cannabis plant. It's by prescription in Australia, which I believe
it's not in your Truth Origins brand, is it?
It's not in the we have a sister company in the UK called Truth Naturals.
That's right, yes.
And CBD oil is legal in many parts of the world, and so many people find benefit for sleep and anxiety and pain. It's by prescription here, but I believe that is one really, really promising supplement. I won't say any more on CBD oil. The other one is curcumin.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which is my favorite. It's my hero.
Anti-inflammatory.
It's my hero supplement. I believe it's the most important supplement that anyone can take. And the evidence for its use is compelling. We have tens of thousands of studies on curcumin. It's, as you say, its best known benefit is in reducing inflammation, reducing so dysregulation.
Curcumin is from turmeric. Yeah. So, I mean, it's got such a history of it. I mean, in Ayurvedic medicine, in Chinese medicine. In the ancient medicines, it's got...
It does.
Yeah.
It does. So it's, I mean, without wanting to sound like it's a panacea, I mean, it's not a treat-all, but some of the things that are being established now are its effect on inflammation, how it reduces dysregulated inflammation and pain. So everything from endometriosis to osteoarthritis, it can reduce inflammation and pain. And we have customers that have taken themselves off a hip replacement list after starting to use curcumin. We did a study on our repeat customers and found that something like 50 to 60% had a significant reduction in pain after a few months. I mean, it's profound. massive effect on pain reduction. As good as Nurofen in many cases, and in many cases,
it's anti-inflammatory.
Because it's anti-inflammatory, they were able to get off painkillers and anti-inflammatories. The other quite well known benefit of curcumin is its effect on cancer cells. So curcumin can kill cancer cells, certain cancer cell lines. Things like colon cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer have all been studied. And for that reason, it's being widely investigated by drug companies as an adjuvant, not as a sole treatment. It's important to explain that this is not an alternative to chemo, radiotherapy, and other forms of treatment at all. But if it helps reduce the disease burden, it is very helpful. And if it can prevent cancer, that would be very helpful as well, obviously.
And can I ask you, are there optimal levels? Because that's the part where my brain explodes.
Good question. The interesting thing about turmeric and curcumin, as you say, it's been used for thousands of years now in cooking and Ayurvedic medicine. Interestingly, it's really poorly absorbed. You could eat a kilogram of turmeric and most of it will pass through you without so much as a skerrick of it getting into your blood and therefore getting to the place that's needed. So what we've managed to do is improve its bioavailability, that is the amount that reaches the bloodstream, by in a very natural way, so without heat or chemicals, through our formulation and the use of other ingredients, we're able to improve bioavailability by 1,000 times. And that means it gets into the blood. So it's not so much about dose, because what's more important is bioavailability. And the key point is that even in high doses, curcumin is safe. You're very unlikely to ever get too much curcumin into your body. So the key is actually to get a curcumin that gets into your bloodstream. And to do that, it needs to be modified. So you can't just add turmeric to your latte or to your cooking. So that's my thing to say there. The final thing which has caught my attention recently is mulberry extract. Oh. Now, we don't have a mulberry extract, but we are looking to add it to our current formulations. Is it
from the leaf or from the fruit? Because I have heard a lot. Yes.
It's from the leaf, and it's purported to reduce carbohydrate absorption.
Oh.
Okay, which is, yes, very interesting. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Anything that reduces carbohydrate absorption, lowers insulin levels, and then it's all good news from there. So we're looking at mulberry extract very keenly now as an additional ingredient in our base curcumin formula. Curcumin, of course, has been also shown to have some metabolic benefits in terms of blood glucose control. That's the jury's still out on that, but there is some exciting research being done. So, yeah, that's my view on supplements.
Well, there's so much I could dive into the screen, and I just want to sit down here and talk through and through and through. But I think we absolutely have to have another episode with you.
I know. I feel like I've only just got started.
We've just warmed up. We're an hour and we've only just... But Dr. Harry, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to speak to you. And I promise I'm going to have you back on the show because we've only just begun. I actually want to do an episode with you on men and women and the ageless journey. I think that there's a lot to unpack there. And I actually have more questions around supplementation that would be great to cover off. But for today, I want to thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your wonderful wisdom. And I'm going to have some links so that people can sign up for your newsletter, because I love your newsletters. That They're informative, they're entertaining, and they're a real shot of information and well-researched information. So I'd love to share that with my audience too.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, absolute pleasure. And it has gone just way too quick, hasn't it? But thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for being on the show. See you again soon.
Great. See you soon.
Ageless by Rescue is brought to you by Rescue Me Academy, Reignite Your Relationship course. Love your relationship but miss the early days? You're not alone. This course will teach you how to identify your issues, stop the fighting, find what you need to be happy, re-spark intimacy, and keep the lines of communication open. Join us at rescuemeacademy.com.au to learn more about the program and to download your first free lesson. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, please share and rate this episode. I'd love that.